Hello and welcome to The Laydown, a podcast where three booksellers from Gibson's Bookstore in Concord, New Hampshire chat about all things literary. My name is Ryan, my pronouns are she, her.
My name is Jill and my pronouns are they, them.
My name is Madeline and my pronouns are she, they.
Awesome! Hey, Madeline!
Hello, welcome!
Thank you.
Thanks for hanging with us this month. How's everyone been?
That's a difficult question to start.
Yeah. Right? It's kind of, yeah. Woo! We're all hanging in there.
Yeah. Surviving, I would say.
Yes. Right off the top, I just want to shout out the Jack of All Graves book club. So I've talked about Jack of All Graves on here before. They're our buddy podcast. And they have a book club that I helped them come up with their year of books.
Very influential.
A privilege.
Yes, yes. And we have a little shoppable list on our website now. And they're awesome. So I just wanted to shout them out.
And am I correct that people are getting a discount?
Yes, yes. There is a special coupon code for the JOAG Book Club. If you want to join us, it's all virtual. We have a Zoom book club every month. I think it's the third Saturday of every month. And our next book is Ring Shout, which I'm so excited to read.
That's been on my list for a really long
forever.
Time.
Like, I remember the arcs coming out.
Yeah, it came out, like, right when I started here. Yeah. And I remember looking at it and not grabbing it.
Yeah, I've been meaning to read it forever, and that's why I decided we were going to make it for JOAG Book Club.
And these are all horror books.
It's a horror book club, but we have a nice range of levels of horror we try to like run the gamut of, you know, folks who are not super duper into horror. We have some like lesser things and then people who are like really really into it, which is why we made sure to announce all of the books for the rest of the year now so that people can decide which meetings they're going to come to.
And I'll shout out Storygraph, which is a good alternative to Goodreads. They have a really great feature of trigger warnings where people can put in, like, I can't remember what, it's like extreme, moderate, mild.
I think that's so the level.
Mm-hmm. And it's user submitted. They also have a feature where authors can put in their own trigger warnings and, like, approve ones that they say are in. But so if you're looking at that and you're like, oh, what is Tender is the Flesh, you can look it up and be like, oh my god, Tender is the Flesh is a book I could not finish.
It was
super intense. So
that's our November book, and we literally chose it because someone in the Jack of All Graves Facebook group said, I'm reading this book right now and it's the grossest thing I've ever read, and we were like, let's do it for book club.
Yeah. So, like, if you want to get a reading on, like, what books are the grossest possible to, like, a more Grady Hendrix level of, like, fun horror.
And another fun feature of Storygraph that we're going to actually play with a little bit is they actually have a read-along feature. Mm. So we've encouraged everyone in book club to switch from Goodreads to the Storygraph, which if you have Goodreads, you can transfer your entire Goodreads history.
It's very easy.
It's super easy. They give you a step-by-step how to do it.
It keeps your ratings, too.
It keeps everything, yeah. All your reviews, your ratings, everything. But so they have this read-along feature where you can put like a page number and some comments about what's going on, and it will only show up for everyone in your little read-along group when you get to that part of the book. So there will be no spoilers, but when you update your, like, I'm on page blah blah blah, it'll be like, oh, here are comments from other people in book club who, you know, are at that point or past it. So we're gonna play with that a little bit. Join us. It's a ton of fun. They are a very intelligent group of humans, but we also goof off and have a ton of fun. And if you aren't already listening to Jack of All Graves, it is my other favorite podcast besides this one. It is Corey and Mark. Corey lives here in the States. Mark is over in the UK, and they are delightful, and they talk about the horrors of humanity, and every episode is completely different from the last and completely different from the next, and they cover a wide range of topics, and it is fascinating. It is so much fun. So, I will put links in the show notes if you want to check out the Jack of All Graves book club. All that being said, I just finished a reread of Mexican Gothic for book club, which was really fun. I came home the other day. I did that thing where I bought a couple of books and then it broke a seal. And
it was a lot.
I came home on Friday with such a huge stack of books, some of which I had purchased, some of which were ARCs that I had gotten and collected over the course of the week. But I mean, like, this was, I mean, I had, I don't even know, like 12, 14 books that I like came home with. I was like, oh no. Some of the, I'll just kind of run through, and most of them are ARCs that I haven't read yet, so I don't know what they're about yet, but I got a bunch of Tor.com novellas that I'll be sharing with my coworkers. Rosebud by Paul Cornell, which comes out in April. Spear by Nicola Griffith, which I know Joe loved. A new one, These Prisoning Hills by Christopher Rowe, which comes out in May and sounds very cool. I think it takes place in Tennessee, in Kentucky.
Is that the spooky robot one?
It's the spooky robot one. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's got a really good cover. A Mirror Mended by Alex E. Harrow, mm-hmm. Which comes out in June and is the follow-up to A Spindle Splintered. I got the physical arc of Wicked Beauty by Katie Robert, which is the third book in her Dark Olympus romance series. So if you read Neon Gods, it's the third one in the series. From Bad to Cursed by Lana Harper. Yes. I got the physical arc of that, which is the follow-up to
Payback's a Witch.
An arc that sounded really good that's called Drunk on All Your Strange New Worlds by Eddie Robson. Just sounds like a cool sci-fi. And then I bought some books. I bought this book called Malice by Heather Walter, which when it came out, the cover caught my eye. It's a very pretty cover, very like cool, looks like a twisted fairy tale type thing. But I, for whatever reason, didn't pick it up. I think initially I picked it up because I was like, is this an Alice in Wonderland retelling that I need to own? And I quickly, no, it's not. Okay. And then didn't really think anything of it. And then it just came out in paperback. And I was filling in the paperback table up front. And I stopped and I read the back and I went, I'm sorry, why have I not purchased this? Because it's like, I think it's like a Sleeping Beauty tale, but it's like very cool, like villain story. And
lesbians.
Yeah, it just
that's
sounds
what caught my attention.
Awesome.
Yeah, it's been on my list for a while, and I think there's a sequel coming out soon.
Probably, yeah. Which? I slept on it. I really slept on it.
Yeah, no, I remember seeing it on Edelweiss.
Yeah.
Slept on it. I expected a lot more people to read it and tell me to read it, and then they didn't. So now I need you to read it and tell me.
Yeah,
I just gave it to my best friend for her birthday.
That's right, because I was like screaming about it, and you were like, this is perfect. Yeah, so I was like, what? How have I not read this? So I bought that. I bought a book that just came out called Road of Bones by Christopher Golden. Christopher Golden, it's a great cover. It's like a snowy road, but when you like actually look at it, it makes a skull. Christopher Golden is a fantastic horror author. And chances are, if you have watched a recent panel of horror authors, Chris has either been part of the panel or he's been moderating the panel. That's how I discovered him. He was on a panel with a bunch of other horror authors who I love, and I was like, oh, I've never read anything by him. And so when this came out, I was like, oh, jumping on that. So I grabbed that, and then I grabbed a book called Such a Pretty Smile by Christy DeMeester.
Oh,
yes.
This was the blurb.
Yes, uh-huh. This was the one where, again, I was just filling in one of the tables up front, and I saw the cover, and I was like, oh, that's a cool cover. And then I saw that the blurb on the front cover is by Josh Malerman. So I was like, oh, yeah, okay. That makes sense. Well, I own this now. and then the last book that I actually pre-ordered for myself a long time ago, back in like October, and it got pushed back and pushed back and pushed back, and it finally came in, is this book. It is a super, super limited. You can only get it directly from the publisher. There were only 1,000 copies printed. Ghoul in the Cape by Josh Malerman. This thing is bigger than I am. This book rivals, like, It by Stephen King. Like, I think it's bigger than It. It is ginormous. And it actually ties in with our topic for today, because it's kind of a road trip book. So there's some sort of, like, evil entity called the Knot. And these two guys, Ghoul and the Cape, team up to fight this evil thing. And it just sounds wild, and I'm in. I mean, you know, Malerman wrote it. I'm in. And then the last few, so I just finished up Cherish Farah by Bethany C. Morrow, which my interview with her is up now. Wow, this book is still affecting me. What an incredible, visceral, creepy, chilling, amazing book. I still haven't figured out a way to describe it with any sort of plot, because there's things that you just, like, you have to just discover in the moment. But it's about two best friends. They're basically the only two Black girls in their neighborhood. One of them has white parents. She was adopted. So that's Cherish. And Farah calls her white girl spoiled because she has all of this white privilege that she gets to take advantage of, even though she's a Black girl. And her parents are very, like, you know, they make sure that she has a Black pediatrician. They make sure that, like, you know, they learned, like, how to do Black hair. Like, they're great. They're model parents to a Black girl. Maybe. Yeah. This is social horror. This is being compared to Get Out, the Jordan Peele movie. It is so intense and so incredible, and I want everyone to read it.
What was it called?
Cherish Farah. Right.
Bethany C. Morrow. I have it on hold at the
library. It is incredible. And I couldn't get, and I read the last, like, three chapters, like, through my fingers. Like, I was pacing my house. It gets real visceral. Real, real visceral. Like, it gets a little gruesome at the end, and I loved it. So definitely go listen to my interview with Bethany, because it's one of my favorite interviews that I've done. She is incredible and so intelligent and had such amazing things to say, and that book is just never going to leave my brain. And then the last one I'll talk about, I am currently reading Comeuppance Served Cold, which is another Tor.com novella by Marion Deeds. It comes out next month. And it's really cool. It's set in the 20s during Prohibition, and there's magic, and it bounces around in time during this very sort of short timeline. It's like 1 month, and you bounce around within that month, and things unfold in a really cool way. And it's kind of this, like, someone infiltrating this family to take them down from within. using very cool magic. It's awesome. So if you're into like kind of mysteries and magic and the 20s, I highly recommend it. It's really good. It's really good.
Yeah,
so
I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah. So that long list is my current craziness. what about you, Joe? What have you been reading?
Yeah, so I said this before we started, but I might have the strangest combination of books I've ever talked about on the podcast. Just like I've been doing some weird things in terms of reading, but good. So what I'm currently reading right now is Devil House by John Darnielle.
Yes.
Who's from the band The Mountain Goats, which is just such a soft spot in my heart for The Mountain Goats. And he has written two other books. And I remember when his first one, Wolf in the White Van, came out in like 2015-ish. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Being really interested in reading it, but it was my senior year of college. And so I was like, not reading anything right now. And then it just kind of fell off my radar, and I never ended up reading it, and now that I'm reading this, I have to go back and read that one, because it just, he's really, really good. Mm. He's a really good writer, which you, obviously, like, the poetry of The Mountain Goats is gorgeous, but you never know if that's going to translate into being able to write a novel, but it does. Mm-hmm. He, like, just the way he describes things is fantastic. So the premise of the book is there's a true crime writer who he wrote one big book a few years back. He's written a couple more. They've been fine.
Mm-hmm.
But like not going, his career isn't going fantastic. But he's in a solid enough place that he could buy a house. And he does, because a house goes for sale where some murders happened.
Oh my god, yes.
In Central California, which is where he's from. So his editor convinces him to buy this house, and then he's like, oh, you can just sell it when you're done, like, get yourself immersed in the crime. And he's like, sure, I guess I don't have anything else to do.
Sure.
So that
I'm sure everything will be fine.
Yeah, everything will
be fine. Happily ever after.
The way that the book is structured is so good, because I am halfway through it and I still don't really know what I'm not sure what the crime was exactly. It's getting more and more clear, but it's very much, he doesn't go like, so then these people were murdered in this house in this way, and this is what happened. Like, I think I know who the murder victim is at this point.
Okay. Oh, you don't even know that?
Yeah, wow. And I think I know who did it. But, yeah, and so the murders were in this house, and the house was covered in satanic drawings. So it was in the 80s, it was the midst of the satanic panic.
Yep.
So there's a lot of talk about how, like, the way we talk about true crime, the way we structure true crime, the way we approach truth, all very fascinating. And so when we pick up with the author, he talks about when he moved into the house and he was going to be there for, like, you know, how long it takes to write the, at least get the beginnings of the book down.
Sure.
A year or whatever. It's been 5 years.
Mm. Oh,
and
no.
And he might not have a book.
Oh, no!
And so this is just, like, what he has. And so, yeah, it goes into, I'm in the part where it's telling the lead up to the crimes. But there's a whole section that was the story of his first book, about a woman who murdered people who came into her house to try to rob her, and she committed a really grisly crime. But that's all told in second person, so it's, you know, like, you didn't have much in your small home, but, like, what you had was important. Like,
I love that.
Yeah, I feel like I'm not describing this book fantastically, but
it sounds so good.
And, yeah, again, I don't really know where it's going. I don't know if it's going to get, like, full horror arms, or if it's just going to be kind of figuring all of this out and kind of how to report on it. But love it. Love it so much. Mm. I, you know, I'm here recording this podcast, but I kind of wish I were reading it, so it's fine, but, yeah. And then, in my, you know, long journey of reading YA horror, one book that I read recently that I liked was All These Bodies by Kendara Blake. Mm-hmm. It's set in the 1950s in the Midwest, and the son of a sheriff in this small town, has been following a serial killer in the newspaper all summer. Mm. And it's been like 10 weeks, I think, since the killer last struck. And so they're kind of thinking maybe things are cooling down or whatever. And then there's a murder in his hometown.
Oh my God.
But this murder is slightly different than the others because there's a girl there at the crime scene, a living girl, covered in their blood, in the blood of the victims.
Oh boy.
And it's a small town. Everyone knows the family who's murdered. Everyone's not thrilled that this girl is there. She's in the jail, but like they don't really know what her deal is. Like, did she do this? Right. Is she a victim? Like, what's happening? Yeah. They're trying to get her to explain it. And she's like, yeah, okay, I'll tell you my story. But I'm only going to tell the sheriff's son. That's the only person I will talk to about this. And, like, he had, you know, interacted with her, like, once in the jail because he's the sheriff's son, and so he's around. And so then all the adults are, like, trying to coach him on how to do it, and, like, so he goes in, he's recording it the whole time, and she starts telling her story, and she's like, yeah, I was running with a vampire.
What?
And it's not clear what that means, or if that's, like, it's not clear if in this world vampires actually exist. Mm-hmm. Everybody in town is like, what is this girl talking about? She's trying to get out of her crime. Mm-hmm. She's trying to pin it on this other guy. The kid who's doing the interviewing is like, is not sure because he wants to trust her, but he's like, he's not a vampire. We've seen the bodies. Like, this isn't...
Yeah.
These people were stabbed. Like, we know what's going on. And so it's kind of this idea, again, apparently my interest of, like, our idea of truth when it comes to crime. Is there a truth? What's happening? Can we ever get to the truth? Yeah. So it was really, really well done. I really liked
You would love And Then I Woke Up.
Okay, I should.
The zombie one. It's all about truth and perspective. Okay. And, like, what is the truth? What actually happened? Was there actually a zombie apocalypse? Okay. Or was it just massacre? Like, wild hallucination? Like, what? We don't know. Yeah, it's
okay,
really
I need to read that one. It's really good. I do have the art. And then a few others. I wanted to say I read Love and Other Disasters by Anita Kelly, which Ryan has talked about as the non-binary cooking competition romance. Mm-hmm. I'll co-sign it. It's very cute.
Yeah.
I really enjoyed that one. And then I've also been reading a lot of classics that I just never read, or, well, some of them I'm rereading, actually, but some are things that I just never read. A couple that I'll just go through quickly. The Strange Case of Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde, never read it.
And I don't know that I've read that one either.
It's fascinating. What got me motivated to actually read it was I saw somebody on TikTok talking about how it's not really possible for us to read The Strange Case of Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde in the way it was intended, because the tension of the book is, who's this guy? Did he murder Dr. Jekyll? Who's this guy Hyde? Why is he around? Like, what's happening?
Interesting.
Like, we don't know how these two people are related. We don't understand it. And, like, growing up in a world where I learned about Jekyll and Hyde from an episode of Arthur.
Yep.
I have that song in my head. Like, yeah. It's that, like, we can't experience it in that way because we all know what Jekyll and Hyde is about.
Yeah.
And how these people are related to each other. Right. And so.
Oh, that's such a good point.
So it definitely took a lot of the tension out, but it was an interesting read to think about, like, how.
Yeah.
And how we can absorb a story so much as a culture that it kind of loses some power almost.
Yeah. Oh, that's interesting.
Another thing, I listened to two different translations of Beowulf, because that's my vibe.
That's fun. Yeah!
And listening to it was very good. I highly recommend it, obviously. When it was originally told, it was an oral story, so it's a good story to listen to. The first translation I listened to was Seamus Heaney. This is a translation I've read before. My medieval lit professor in college just adores this edition, this translation. So it's like kind of solid. It's modern. It was in the 90s. Like, it's accessible but traditional.
Yeah.
And then I also read the most recent translation by Maria Devana Headley, which is the one that starts with bro.
Bro!
Bro! And it has, you know, they say hashtag blessed at one point. Oh, there's like amazing. A lot of contemporary language in it. And it was really interesting comparing them. And I definitely think I got a lot out of the new translation that I didn't get from the Haney translation either when I first read it or now, because it grabbed me a little bit more and I kind of understood some of the subtleties more. And so that was interesting. I can't come down on a side. I don't know if like we should absolutely be reading the Headley translation in schools, because I think there's a value to like it's a complicated thing. Yeah. It's a complicated thing because none of us. Okay, I can't assume about our listeners. Maybe some of you can read Old English, but like 90% of us are never going to read
it takes a
the
lot.
Original Beowulf. Right. Like, that's right. Not
we
a
need
thing.
A translation.
That's not going to happen.
Yeah.
There are plenty of translations over the course of all time from like the early modern period to now. So like, it was an interesting act of like sitting with what translation means and like what we can accept about our classics and what we can't allow in to our classics. It was very interesting. But I definitely recommend it. I definitely recommend doing two of them together. There's also a Tolkien translation that I know is very popular. I don't think I've ever read that one, but lots of people are like, oh, Tolkien,
right?
So definitely an interesting text, and it's also a really interesting story. It's just one of our earliest stories in any version of the English language. Very interesting. And then I've been reading a couple plays. I will thank Madeline for lending me Medea by Euripides, which I've never read for some reason. I never took too much like ancient Greek, like classes that focused on ancient Greek drama. And I super recommend revisiting books you haven't read that missed you in school or that you haven't read in a long time.
Yeah.
And the other one I've been reading is Cyrano de Bergerac by Edmund Rostand, but translated by Anthony Burgess of all people.
Wow.
I'm like, what? Okay. Alright. As anyone who knows me knows, I care a lot about Shakespeare. I've read quite a bit of early modern English drama, but not a ton of outside of England. So I'm trying to kind of broaden the horizons. Also, there's a new Cyrano movie coming out with Peter Dinklage in the title role, which is incredible.
That's right.
I'm excited about that. So, yeah, I'm doing that, and I will probably have more early modern drama to talk about next time, because that's where my head's at the moment. So,
I love that.
Yeah, that's my weird little section of my brain right now.
I'm very into it. I love it. Madeline, what about you? What have you been reading?
All right,
recently?
Here we go. So I just finished Mouse, Yes. Good. Okay. I heard it everywhere. I saw a copy and I said mine.
Which is what you need to do.
Yeah.
I'm going to just put out there, if you want a copy, please order it. Yes. Like, please don't wait for us to get it back in stock, because we're getting them back in stock, but they're immediately going to people who've ordered them. Like,
yeah, they're already...
It's not going to be on our shelf for a long time, I would say.
Yeah, they're pretty much all already set aside for people who have ordered it.
And like, you don't have to pay in advance. Like,
no, you can just order.
Give us your name.
Yeah, we'll just make sure that you have a copy. Yeah.
Anyway, sorry. Go.
No, it's okay. It's so worth doing that. It was the first book this year I rated 5 out of 5 stars.
Yes!
So that was exciting.
Did you read part 1 and 2?
Just part 1.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Eventually I'll take on part 2, but for now, I'll be reading some other stuff.
Definitely.
I'm currently reading On Writing by Stephen King.
Oh, such a good book. Which is,
I've always heard good things.
Interesting, because I've never actually read any of his other books.
Okay.
I'm going into Stephen King with his memoir.
Interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. I can see that. Like, from
that's valid.
People I know who really like that book. Like,
yeah
I feel like it's separate from his
fiction in a way. Yeah. Yep, it's a different side of...
I'm hoping it gives me more insight to when I eventually read one of his books.
Yeah.
I'm very excited about that.
Sam will give you so many recommendations.
Like, Sam will hook you up.
I would appreciate that. I also just finished The Age of Anxiety by Pete Townsend.
Ooh.
That was pretty good. I was happy with that. Not something I usually read, but it was a nice step away.
Mm-hmm. And what was that one about? Is that a memoir as well?
It's fiction.
Okay.
There's a young man named Walter. He's in a band living that rock star life.
Mm.
And he decides he needs a break from everything because it's a lot.
Yeah.
So he spends 15 years building this maze with plants in his backyard. And meanwhile, there's a bunch of drama between the other people and relationships and... There's a lot going on to it, but it's interesting.
Cool. That sounds cool.
Okay.
Right.
Huh. Yeah. And then, yes, I read Madea. that was recommended to me by one of my friends who is majoring in all this Greek literature stuff, and she has great recommendations, and the version I read had annotations on the side.
Yeah.
Nice.
And yeah, that's definitely good. Yeah. Recommend that.
As someone who has no background in Greek mythology, that was really helpful. I also had, like, a glossary.
Mm-hmm.
I appreciated that.
Yeah, and, like, those a little so summary at the back. At least the one you lent me that, like, kind of went
a
over.
A background on Jason. Because, basically, Medea leaves her home and she goes to live with this hero, Jason. And he cheats on her.
Mm.
She gets angry. you can decide whether she is a hero or a convict. So I recommend taking that on. And it's not long.
Oh,
that's
it's
what
super,
is appealing
it's like
about
60
it.
Pages.
Oh,
it's
I love
really,
that.
Yeah.
It's really good. And she's a really good, I don't want to say villain, because you can definitely,
it goes
like, read
either
it
way.
Whatever way. But, like, traditionally, definitely... when she's referenced, because you'll find references to Medea in Shakespeare, you'll see, like, that she's portrayed as a villain, so actually reading the text, I think, is interesting.
That's really cool.
She's in Percy Jackson.
Oh, that's fun.
I mean,
it makes sense, but...
Yeah. Everyone's in Percy Jackson. There are so many of the books that, like, you can fit every Greek...
It's true.
...character into it.
Yeah, some of the things that I'm excited about... Educated just came out in paperback.
Oh my god, thank god, everybody.
It's about time. So excited.
Finally! That one's so good.
Yes.
I can't recommend that enough. That's by Tara Westover.
And a little summary of that, if people don't know.
A girl grew
up in a Mormon survivalist cult.
Worried about the end of the world. Her family was very worried about that, and they lived in the woods and stayed away from everyone, and obviously that had an impact on her social development. Eventually, though, after a lot of incidents, she's in college, and she does a lot of phenomenal work, so it works out in the end, but it's sometimes it's tough to get through.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. They don't do traditional medicine at all. Like, there's a whole section about her mom having a traumatic brain injury just not doing anything.
Wow. They're just getting hurt incredibly bad. One of them caught on fire.
Yeah, one of her brothers.
Yeah. So it's intense.
It's intense, but it's real good, yeah.
Yeah, it's beautifully written. And then there's a book called Rabbits by Terry Miles.
Have you read the back of it? I haven't.
We've had a couple coworkers who've read that.
I guess it's based off of a podcast.
Okay.
Not sure much about it, but it's kind of video game-esque. I'm getting Ready Player One vibes.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. This sounds familiar. Yeah.
Yeah. I feel Zane like read it. Yeah. And Heather read it.
Yeah.
That just came out in paperback. Really so weird. I think I'm going to take it on because it's not like anything I've read, and that's kind of what I want to do.
Yeah. Oh, that's awesome.
That's the extent of what I've got going on.
I love it. We're so eclectic this time. Just this episode. All over the place. All over the map. I'm loving it. Speaking of all over the map. Oh, I didn't even.
Transition.
Wow.
Let's pretend you meant to do that.
I'm going to pretend that was an on purpose segue. We're going to talk about travel this episode, but not just your typical travel memoirs. We're going to talk about all kinds of different types of travel books and books as escapism. So I think we'll kick it off with some sort of like nonfiction travel, sort of like the ones that you're immediately thinking of. Mm-hmm. Travel memoirs and things like that. And then we're going to go into more like fiction travel, and then we're going to get into some genre fiction books of places we just wish we could go in real life. So let's kick it off. Madeline, I know you've read a lot of nonfiction, and I know you've been reading some travel memoirs. What would you recommend? What are some of your recent ones or your favorite ones? What do you got?
My all-time favorite one is Walking to Listen by, I don't know how to say his last name, Andrew.
Ooh, that's a name. For Steffel?
Well, fun fact about his name, Andrew, if you rearrange the letters, can be Wander. And that was a big kind of inspiration to him. I thought that was cute. Huh.
That's cute. All right. So we don't know how to say it, but possibly Andrew Forsteffel?
Yeah.
Forsteffel, but Walking to Listen. Yes. So what's that one about?
Regardless, yes. He walked across the country with a baby stroller holding all of his stuff.
What? That's awesome.
He didn't really prepare much for it either.
Yeah. Just jumped right in.
Yeah.
He pulled a Forrest Gump and was like, I'm just going.
Exactly. Yeah. He started off tenting. Okay. Then he kind of realized, I want to talk to people. That's why I'm doing this. And he listened to their stories and at times depended on the kindness of people, random strangers. And he would go into their homes and they would house him for the night. But everyone was so different, obviously.
Yeah.
It was inspiring in the sense that there are very kind people out there.
Yeah.
I feel like sometimes they don't get a good enough rep. Oh, not good enough rep, but
you hear about all the bad.
Yeah,
you
know, yeah.
It's nice to hear about some good humans.
Yes, and there were lots of good humans in this. That made me happy. Aww. And he's a great storyteller. It's also one of those books that you can pick up and open to any chapter.
Ooh,
and it could make sense.
I like that.
Obviously, if you read it all together, you get the picture better, but
yeah.
It's good.
That's awesome.
And then the one I've read more recently that I did review was Blue Highways by William Lees Heatmoon. This one I still liked. He had a van, so he didn't walk, obviously. That changes how things go for him. And it was in the 80s. Mm-hmm. So it was a little different, and I kind of wanted to learn some stuff for when I go cross country and do some sort of big trip like this.
Yeah.
But the stuff from the 80s wasn't as relevant today.
Things are a little different now.
Yeah. So from that, I mainly took how he wrote about his experiences and just kind of the emotional thing. There's a lot of alone time. So what he did with that was nice.
Ugh. Oh, man. Yeah, I can't imagine doing a cross-country trip like that just, like, solo. Especially, like, in the 80s when there wasn't, like, you couldn't be, like, plugged into, you know, you couldn't just, like, text your friends, like, here's where I'm at, like.
Or GPS the nearest gas station.
Oh, God, yeah. You just had to hope.
I just thought of another book because we're talking about this. Anyway.
Well, please share.
Well, no, that I'm just gonna toss this out, and this is just, it's gonna make people dislike me as a human, and that's fine. Like, I get it. It's fine. But I did, I loved Paper Towns, the book, as a teenager. Respect. And after graduating high school, me and my best friend, before we went to college, drove to the fictional town of Agloe in upstate with New York without use of our phones or anything. We did it all through actual maps. We like, we had the cell phones, like, in the car in case we had an issue, but, like, that's not, and
don't depend on that.
We don't depend on that, and we just drove straight there and straight back.
Oh, that's funny.
So we left at, like, 3 a.m.
Oh my gosh.
And it's a paper town in upstate New York. It's
It's a whole thing with maps
and copyright traps. It's a book by John Green. I adore it as a teenager, and
wow, that's crazy.
Yeah, so that was what that brought. That brought back really, like, a visceral memory.
Yeah,
Figuring out how to use a map as a, like, teenager and driving through upstate New York, where, like, neither of us had ever been. Wow. Anyway,
that's wild.
Weird Joe story.
I enjoyed it.
And it's relevant.
It is. Another one I've recently read, actually a picture book, which was exciting. In the biography section. It's called Girl on a Motorcycle by Amy Noveski.
Okay.
And it follows a woman who, in England, I think probably about the 80s, she took her motorcycle and traveled all around the world.
Love that.
She was a woman, and, you know, by herself. It was pretty intense for her at times.
That's a little dangerous, sure.
But she had a phenomenal time, and this picture book was really, it was a nice introduction to her story. The woman herself wrote about her experience, but they're not translated to English.
Oh, no!
So for now, I'm going to rely on this picture book, and it was a good one. It was a good one.
That sounds awesome.
And then just a few other travel kind of ideas. I don't have any specific ones, but in our local section, there's, like, haunted places in New Hampshire.
Yes! Oh, I love those.
The oddities of New England.
Yes.
Any of those have been great for me to start little road trips.
Yes, absolutely.
Oh, that's such a good idea. If any of you don't know, the Ghost Hunters from the Ghost Hunters TV show own a hotel in New Hampshire that's haunted.
Oh!
I know this. So, my parents travel to hunt ghosts.
That's such a weird reaction. Sorry.
That's like one of their things. They like to go to haunted places and try to see ghosts. So, they've obviously been to this hotel. But, yeah. There are a lot of good haunted things. Mount Washington, obviously. Hotel.
Yeah.
Probably also the mountain. But
yeah. Specifically the hotel.
Yeah.
Which the Overlook is modeled after.
Yes. I love that because it's such a New England thing.
New Englanders,
because, like, ostensibly it's based on this hotel in Colorado, but every New Englander is like, okay, go to the Mount Washington Hotel and tell me that's not.
Tell me that's not the Overlook.
Tell me it's not. Like, it gets, like, very territorial.
We are very possessive.
But it totally is.
It is.
Yeah.
That's so fun. I love that. Now I want to, like, do a haunted road trip around New England. That's such a good idea.
And there's hiking trails, too.
Like, yeah, haunted
go
hikes.
Into the middle of the woods to see haunted things.
I don't, but I do.
Yep.
I feel that.
Oh.
And I'm going to toss out here, because you've talked about a few people, like, traveling on their own. Like, there's nothing I can more highly recommend to a young person to, like, understand yourself and, like, how you interact with the world than traveling alone.
Yeah.
Obviously. Like, can be real scary.
Be careful.
Be careful.
Take precautions.
I have some stories, but I'm here.
Yeah, you made it.
You know, you can get mugged in Amsterdam and be fine. Don't worry about it. It's a great way of learning about yourself and take the precautions you can take, but like once COVID, maybe someday we're safe to travel again, just like pick a city you've always wanted to go to and never been to. If you have the means to travel, just go on your own and like have your parents or your spouse or your whoever check in every so often and be like, hey, nothing weird happening. Like, you can call them once a day. And, just because there's something about being able to completely do your own thing traveling.
Yeah.
That is really exciting. Like, no, if I had gone to Paris with somebody else, they would not have wanted to go on a all-day self-guided walking tour of Les Mis.
Oh, okay.
Which I did.
Wow.
Design myself and take myself on.
Of course you did.
Of course you did.
When I was in college.
In my head, I was like, catacombs. I want to go to the catacombs.
I know. I didn't go to the catacombs when I was in Paris.
I know. Well, that just means you have to go back.
Yeah. In Paris.
Good point.
Yeah, absolutely. No, I had to go see where the barricades were.
I mean, fair. That's fair.
See, like, where they pulled up bricks from.
That's cool.
Anyway,
there are so many cool places in the world,
and there are so many cool places in literature that you can actually like physically go to and check it out.
I mean, it's hard to travel right now with COVID.
Yes, but read those books. You can read the books. You can escape into the books. I also just like on the nonfiction route, I just have to shout out, like, obviously, like, Eat, Pray, Love was, like, a huge thing. It's worth a read, you know. It's, finding yourself. Again, it's like a woman being like, I don't know what I'm doing with my life. I'm just going to go travel. And, like, good for her. Good for you, Elizabeth Gilbert. You seem nice. You were on My Brother and Me, so I like you.
Ooh. Oh, that does make me like
her. Doesn't that make you like her more?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, she's a friend of the McElroys now, okay, so, like, I'm into it.
All right.
The Wild by John Krakauer is another great one.
I will also mention Into Thin Air. It's, like, slightly not much travel. Like, most of us won't hike Everest, but I was obsessed with that story as a kid, and it's a really good story of a disastrous 1990s hike of Everest that he happened to be on. Like, it was one of the biggest death tolls of a trip. And he just happened to be reporting hiking Everest at the time. And, fascinated.
Yeah. And then I'm going to shout out one of our local authors, Dan Sesney. He's got a few books. The one I grabbed here was the Nepal Chronicles. But he has a few books. He actually just put out during the pandemic a book with his daughter Uma
about rocks.
And they have been traveling all over New Hampshire looking at cool rocks.
Incredible.
I love them so much. So there are, there are just so many cool, like, nonfiction, like, travel memoirs and things like that.
New Hampshire rocks that rock, right?
Yeah, I think, New Hampshire rocks that rock is so cute. And they are local, so you can get a little signed copy, and Uma signs it, and she, like, doodles.
That's incredible.
It's so cute! I love them so much. But let's transition a little bit into fiction books. So Joe mentioned, like, traveling books that you can read that have real places that you can visit.
Yes.
And, like, and also fiction books that have road trips are really fun as well.
Yeah.
So Joe, what do you got for
us?
So there's
a lot going on here, and I'm gonna not mention everything because there are a couple on here that I've talked about on other podcast episodes, including Exit West by Mohsin Hamid. Great Circle by Maggie Shipstead, both about travel and or like migration movement, refugees is more exit west. Both incredible books, both shortlisted for the Booker. Mm. And then a couple that are just kind of about traveling. Flights.
Mm.
By Olga Tokarczuk. I just finished it. It was a weird thing that it happened that our coworker Matt and I both picked up this book at the same time and just were like, oh, you're also reading this book. But it came out in the US in 2018, but she's a Polish writer. It was originally published in Poland in 2007.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how to describe what this book's about.
That's so fair.
It's so good. It's very fragmented. It has kind of an overarching narrator who's an unnamed woman who travels just constantly, is always moving, kind of captures that sense of isolation, but also communal aspects of traveling.
Yeah.
And then intercut throughout are just stories of other people, and it's a lot about grief. It's about the body, and like there is a whole kind of theme to it of cabinets of curiosity and bodies and the way we interact with bodies that we see as other. And it's so good. And like some of it is based on true stories. There's a part compelling bit about Chopin, the
composer.
Composer's sister took his heart back to Poland after he died. She got a surgeon to take his heart out, and she smuggled it under her skirts into Poland so nobody like
that
knew she was
is so metal.
Bringing
that's
a
very
human
like,
heart.
That's very Mary Shelley.
Yeah. And because he wanted it buried in Warsaw.
That's amazing.
Yeah. So it's just. Really,
it's a solid sister.
That's really cool. I know,
incredible.
Right?
Incredible. Yeah, a woman travels home to poison her terminally ill high school sweetheart.
Wow.
He writes to her and he's like, hey, remember how you promised you'd do anything for me? Here it is. You need to come home and kill me because I'm done with. It's so good. I am ready to read everything she has ever written. She won the Nobel in 2018.
Okay.
It was just the past couple years. Also won the Booker International Prize.
Yeah.
Just incredible. She has a new book out, The Books of Jacob, which I really want to read.
It's huge.
That's kind of why I'm intimidated
by it.
I just bought her other book, Drive Your Plow Over the Bones of the Dead.
Yes.
I'm on board with everything she wants to do forever. Funny story about her is I happened to be in Powell's in Portland when she was giving a talk, and I just heard her talking and was like, what is this woman's deal? Like, okay, she seems interesting, and like sat down and listened, and that was right before she won the Nobel, and it was
cool.
That's exciting.
Isn't that cool?
She's just a really interesting person, interesting writer.
Love that.
And then I was going to mention Less by Andrew Sean Greer. I know our book club did it very recently. It won the Pulitzer a few years back. So this book was a journey for me.
Okay.
Which makes sense because of the storyline. It's about a man who is kind of a failed novelist. He finds out his ex is getting married and he's like, screw this.
Right.
I'm traveling the world. And so 75% of the book, I was like, okay, this is like a 3-star book. Like, all right.
Solid book.
Yeah, solid book. A little bit like white guy whining about his life, like, all right, whatever. And by the end, I was sobbing.
Wow!
And the wild thing was I was using Goodreads at the time. I went on Goodreads, and Roxanne Gay had a review that was almost the same thing. She's like, I don't know what happened.
Wow!
It flips it in the last 25%, and you're like, get super emotionally invested. And there's a sequel coming out.
Yes.
This fall. So that's exciting.
That's so cool.
That's,
see, now I want to read it.
Great one, yeah. And then I'm going to shout out real quick, Death on the Nile, Murder on the Orient Express by Agatha Christie.
Yes.
Everyone who knows me knows Agatha Christie is my go-to travel books. I just take them anytime I'm going on vacation. I adore her. And both of these take place, Murder on the Orient Express, obviously, on a train, Death on the Nile on a boat. Mm-hmm. So it deals with this same themes of, like, being within this forced community almost, yes, and not, and like how you relate to people, and obviously murder, and like
also
murder. And they're two of her best, and I know that Death on the Nile just came out, the Kenneth Branagh adaptation. He'd previously done the Murder on the Orient Express,
yes, so which just looked really good. I haven't watched that one. I just watched the original one, which was really fun.
I love the original. It was really fun.
I had never seen that version, and I was like, oh, this is great.
I just really like her. She's really good at writing mysteries, mm-hmm, you guys. I know that's shocking to hear, but I always assumed she was kind of like, oh, an older author, like flash in the pan 50s, like, right, whatever. No, fantastic. No,
there's a reason that all of her books are in print.
She's the queen of the mystery. She is fantastic. And then there were a couple I wanted to mention that I just think have a really great sense of place and time, and really pull you into a very specific world. So, where do I want to start? I guess I'll start with Salman Rushdie's Midnight's Children, which won the Booker in, I believe, 1984.
Okay.
It is about a boy, Salim. He is born at midnight on August 15th, 1947, which was the moment that India gained independence from Britain.
Oh, wow.
And he, there's a lot of, it's magical realism, it's Salman Rushdie.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot made of, he has a very large nose that almost looks like the Indian subcontinent.
Mm-hmm.
And then his life goes on, his actions and his choices seem mirrored in the happenings of the new nation. So, like, he is India, and all the children born on midnight on this date have this attachment to India as a place.
Cool.
It's so good. It's just, it's really fascinating, and jumps around in time a lot, but will give you a really strong sense of partition, of what India was like prior to the independence, and then, you know, the aftermath, the assassination of Gandhi, then, like, the political movements of India in its first 40-ish years of existence as an independent nation.
Mm.
Love, 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 love that one. After Dark by Haruki Murakami.
I love him. I haven't read that one.
So, it's so weird.
I love him.
This was the first by him that I read. And
really?
Like,
okay.
Why? Nobody's heard of it. It was like, honestly, it was, I wanted to read something by him. I was doing a reading challenge, and it was like, you need to read a book that's set far away from, like, 5,000 miles away from you.
Gotcha.
Okay. Yep. So this one's set in Tokyo. It was not as long as some of his other books, so I just, like, grabbed it.
Yeah.
And it was so good. It's takes place over one night in Tokyo.
Ooh.
And it's just, it's about this, like, that liminal space of cities, most, like, from midnight till 6 a.m.
Okay.
People, the things people do, the way they act, mm-hmm, after dark. And it's just really, really, really well done. I would highly recommend that. It's one we don't have in the store at the moment, but we can get it in, because it's, like, not, It's an underrated one by him, and again, how I ended up picking that specific one, I don't even really know.
I mean, I started with 1Q84, which is, like, not the one you should probably start with.
Thing
it's
you
a
could
thousand
possibly.
Pages yeah. long.
That was basically, like, that was the one that was recommended to me, and I was like, I cannot invest in that until I know that I like this author.
I have to say, Haruki Murakami has such a specific writing style that, like, even just now saying the title 1Q84, like, I got, like, full body chills, and, like, I am, like, back to, like, when I was reading it. I read that book in 2 days.
Oh, my God.
In 2 days. Wow. I read that book, and when I read the last page, I handed it to my now husband, because we had borrowed it from the library, and we were both going to read it. I handed it to him and then started reading over his shoulder as he opened it. Murakami has such an interesting writing style that is unlike any other author I've ever read.
Yeah.
And he talk about, like, escapism and, like, transporting you. Like,
yeah, it's
like, he, like, exactly. not only, like, transports you to, like, the actual place in the book, right? But also, like, he makes your brain work differently. And, like, he does this, like, magical realism stuff, and it's like, is it fantasy? Is it not? There's he's so good at writing, like, weird fiction and, like, but not quite, like, unsettling, just sort of, like, odd.
Well, that's it's such After Dawn is such a strange book, but in that perfect way where he perfectly captures that feeling of being in a diner at 3 a.m.
Yes.
when there's no one else there.
And that's kind of the vibe of all of his books. Yeah. Is like, it feels like you're up way past your bedtime, you're in the middle of the night, and you're, like, outside somewhere that is unfamiliar to you. Like, that is what it feels like to read a Murakami book,
yeah.
And I cannot recommend him highly enough. And he's got so many books, and
so many.
You don't have to start with 1Q84.
Yeah.
Like,
that 1Q84 and Wind Up Bird Chronicles are, like,
yes.
his biggest...
Those are the
biggest
ones, you know.
In terms of people know it, but also biggest in terms of word count and page number. So, like, yeah, there are a lot of smaller good.
Yeah.
I've heard really good things about Kafka on the Shore.
Yep.
Which is a shorter one. So
there's one about like The Strange Library, which is again,
I want that one so badly, and
yeah.
I need to
I have
it.
The hardcover of it, and again, I read it, like, while I was working one day, because it's very, very short. And again, I just was like, I feel so out of my own body right now.
Yeah.
He's amazing. Yeah.
He's
if
really,
you've
really
never
good.
Read Murakami, give him a shot. Even if you don't think you like weird books, just try. Just try it because he's a brilliant writer. And even if you're like, this is weird, I don't know what's going on, you'll still be able to, like, appreciate the craft.
Mm-hmm.
And I bet he will convert you into liking weird books because, he just makes you feel like, I don't know what's going on. I feel like I don't have both feet on the ground right now. Like, I kind of feel like I'm floating outside my body and things are weird and confusing and I love it. Sorry, that was a tangent,
no,
but, like, oh my
totally
god.
Fair. It's
love
very
him.
Good. Another book that I think has a good sense of place that I have talked about on the podcast, so I won't go into detail, but The Everlasting by Katie Simpson Smith. It's set in Rome over four different time periods. One is a young girl who is an early Christian martyr. One is a monk in the 600s who is on crypt duty. He is watching the crypt. One's a Medici princess, and one is a scientist in 2016, and it just captures Rome over a period of time. And it just really does a very good job of portraying the city that has existed for so very long.
Yeah.
And then the last one I want to talk about, which is just a personal favorite, and I feel like has not gotten enough attention. It is a Booker Prize winner from 2018, but when it won the Booker, it hadn't been published in the U.S. yet, so I think a lot of people just kind of overlooked it. It's called Milkman by Anna Burns. She is the only person from Northern Ireland to win the Booker.
Oh, wow.
Okay.
And it is, it's possibly my best example of a book with a good sense of place and time, because it's set in an unnamed city, in an unnamed time period. None of the characters have names. The Ooh. Narrator is called Middle Sister, because she's Ooh. The middle sister of the family.
Okay.
But it is about Belfast in the 1970s. It is strongly and very strongly anchored in the troubles of Northern Ireland, in this very specific city and place. And it's so good. It's so weird in its way of, like, not having character names or anything outright telling you. It does a good job of showing, not telling. It doesn't tell you where it is, but you know. If you know the history, you know where it is, and it's just so well done. It was one thing that got me really fascinated by the Troubles as a time period and about the politics of Northern Ireland. And I would highly recommend it to anybody. It is, I think, an overlooked Booker winner. It's one that half the time I go over to our award winner display and it's not on the Booker list. I'm like, no, it has to go. We don't need two Hilary Mantel. I love Hilary Mantel, but I'm like, no, we have to have this. People need to buy it. It's just, again, really good sense of place and space and... Yeah, love it. Love that book.
That's awesome. So I want to talk a little bit about like sci-fi fantasy travel books. So books with a setting that doesn't exist.
But you wish it did,
and you feel transported there when you read them. So, you know, some of the obvious ones. We all want to, like, maybe not all of us, but, like, a large portion of us probably want to visit Middle Earth, you know? Yeah. I very much would like to visit Wonderland. right? Like, there are, you know, who doesn't want to go see Oz, right? Yeah. So, like, things like that. So I just want to, like, talk about a few. So one of the first ones that popped into my head when we were coming up with this topic was Welcome to Night Vale. I so badly want to go to Night Vale. I just, oh my gosh, located somewhere in the American Southwest, surrounded by a vast empty desert, and it's just weird. And there's a glow cloud, and there's a library that be careful of the librarians, and there's a park that you don't go to the dog park. And like, just, I love it so much. You know, I have talked about Night Vale a lot on the podcast, but for anyone who hasn't given their podcast a chance, go back and listen to, even if you just hop into like the real early few episodes, just to like get the vibe. Their podcast is amazing, and they have a bunch of books out now. Welcome to Night Vale is the like transcripts of like the first several episodes.
And it's a good way, because I listened to Night Vale when it first came out, and then it kind of, found other things, because I tend not to commit to podcasts very well.
No, that's fair.
And there are now so many, and I'm like, oh God, what am I supposed to do? So like the books I feel like are a good way in of like, okay, you can get this world, but you don't need to be like, all right, let's go start this book or start this podcast and listen to 100 episodes.
Like I definitely, you don't have to feel overwhelmed. I would say pick up the book and read it. It's like the first, I forget how many it ends up being, but it's like the first chunk of episodes. And there are other ones too. There's they have a whole book on the faceless old woman who lives in your house. She is the faceless old woman who lives in your house.
So the faceless old woman who lives in your house is voiced by Mara Wilson, who was Matilda in the Matilda movie.
That's amazing.
Yeah, I remember it was like a thing that popped up on Twitter after, like, Night Vale started, like, getting a lot of attention. People were like, oh my god, that's Matilda. That's
so cool. I never made that connection. Yeah.
Sorry.
I love that. So, highly, highly recommend that. And then jumping off of that, so the Joseph Fink, who's one of the creators of Night Vale, they did an offshoot podcast called Alice Isn't Dead, and they also wrote a book. And it's not the transcripts, it's a novelization of the podcast. And it is phenomenal, and it is a road trip book. And it is about a woman who is looking for her wife who she thought died. And then she sees her on TV in the background of a news report. And then she keeps seeing her on TV in the background of news reports. And she goes on this road trip. She takes a job as a long-haul trucker and with this kind of shady company. And she embarks on this road trip across the United States to find Alice. And she encounters some of the weirdest, creepiest things on her journey. This book has descriptions that have never left my brain. There are things that are described so beautifully, and this is just like a Joseph Fink thing. Like, I just love the way he writes, that like I still see them so vividly in my mind. And it is one of those things where it's like that thing you saw out of the corner of your eye, it was really there, and it's way scarier than you thought it was. It's so good. It's so good, and it is an excellent road trip book. And then some other ones that, again, I just love. And there's a theme here. I'm looking at my list, and they're all a little bit spooky.
We're all shocked.
Yeah, I'm really surprised.
But Goblin, obviously, Josh Malerman. I so badly want to go to Goblin, Michigan. I know it's not real. I want it to be real. What a weird town. It's always raining. Everything's a little bit green. Things are weird.
Sounds like Portland.
a little bit. I love, there's a detail where the Goblin Cemetery, they bury the bodies standing up so that they have more room in the cemetery.
Great.
I love Goblin so much. Also, I found out that he's writing the pilot for a TV show.
I saw that on Twitter in your Twitter interactions.
And I was like, excuse me? I'm sorry, what? So I'm very excited for that. I don't know if there's like actually, like, if it's actually being made or if he's just writing it so that it's out there. I don't know, but oh my god, I need it. And then we've talked about Maine already. Let's go ahead and talk about Derry, Maine.
You want to go to Derry's?
Well, it's based on Bangor. So you can go to Derry, Maine.
There you go.
This is my tie-in, is that if you are a Stephen King fan and you want to experience a little bit of his books without being murdered, you can go to Bangor and you can see the actual places that he has written about. You can see the Chinese restaurant that the Losers Club meets up at years later. That's a real place. You can see the giant Paul Bunyan statue. That's there. That's a thing that's there.
And it might kill you.
And it, you never know. It might come to life and try to kill you. You can see the Barrens. It's, you can go to the Barrens. I mean, I don't recommend it, but you can. And of course, you can see Stephen King's house, which has very cool wrought iron gates with these cool, like, spider web and bat designs on them. His house is very spooky looking. Yeah, and I just think that's fun. I just think it's like, again, it's like a point of pride for New Englanders.
That's why I'm reading the memoir. I know all the town names.
Exactly! It's so fun. It's like, yeah, we know, I have been there. I know that. And then also shout out Neverwhere, London Below, London Above, and London Below. I just really like the idea that there's a London Below. I just really, like, I know it's like shady and scary, but I just love the idea that, like, there's magic happening around us that we just don't see. Yeah. But, like, if you are at the right place at the right time with the right person, you might get to see it. And, like, along those same lines, like, that's, you know, the 10,000 Doors of January, the Starless Sea, the Night Circus. Like, if you're in the right place at the right time, you might get a glimpse.
Yeah, you're coexisting with these magical things.
There are these magical lands all around you that you can just be transported to. There's just so many good sci-fi fantasy travel books.
Yeah.
You know, Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy.
I mean, Neil Gaiman in general does quite a bit of, like, travel. Yes.
And American Gods is a road trip book, technically. Mm-hmm.
Which that's what Neverwhere is from, right? Right? That's Neil Gaiman.
Neil Gaiman is, yeah. Neverwhere is Neil Gaiman.
Okay.
Yeah.
I haven't read that one.
It's really good. So, yeah, I just, man, like, books are, they really do help you escape.
Yeah, a little vacation. Like,
a little vacation from this.
Reality.
Yeah.
It's so nice to jump into.
And while we can't travel.
Yeah.
This is the time to do it.
Yeah. And really, like, you can find, you know, we have proven that, like, you can travel in any type of book. Like, there are, whether you read nonfiction, literary fiction, genre fiction,
graphic novels.
Whatever you read, there's a way to travel. You just have to kind of let yourself go. Yeah. And, I also really want to go to Narnia. Like, I used to go into my little closet and, like, push back all the clothes. Because there was a door in the back of my closet. It just went to an attic.
But if you opened it at the right time, maybe it wouldn't just go to that.
Well, here's the thing, is it was sealed shut. Right?
This is where it all started for you.
Yeah, and this also sounds like the plot of a horror novel, too. That, like, there's a sealed door in a closet, and then, it's not sealed anymore, huh?
Oh, it's open now. Yeah, I should write that story. I don't, if either of you have more books you want to shout out, feel free.
I also definitely recommend traveling to places that you've seen in books, because now that I think about it, I'm like, oh yeah, I did the Paper Towns thing. London, my gosh.
I want to do a literary road trip. I think that's so cool. Yeah. I would encourage listeners, go on our Twitter and just, like, tell us about your favorite travel book, regardless of genre. And if you have been to a place that you read about in a book, whether nonfiction or fiction, tell us about it, because I'm all jacked up on this now.
Yeah.
So
2025, we're all going world.
Yes.
Gibson's world tour.
Yes. Oh man. We'll wrap up there, but the list is honestly endless. So,
it is,
you know, if you have your own recommendations for us, either email us or shout us out on Twitter. Before we wrap up, just as always, a quick reminder about our partnership with Libre FM. We love them. They support us. They support indie bookstores. They're an amazing alternative to Audible. If you're new to Libre FM, if you haven't made the switch yet, use the code LAYDOWN at checkout and you'll get 3 audiobooks for the price of 1 credit. I can't recommend them highly enough. Mm. They're the best. We love them. So definitely do that. Again, you can email us about the podcast at thelaydownpodcast@gmail.com. Our website is gibsonsbookstore.com. We're also on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and TikTok. We'll put those links in the show notes, along with all of the books that were mentioned during this episode.
So many.
Of which there were a lot, per usual. We're always.
I mean,
Thank you all so much for listening. Don't forget to subscribe so you'll know when we upload our next episode, and consider leaving us a nice review. Until next time, we'll see you in the stacks. Bye!